Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. It
How's your air conditioning?
was running. Now it's not.
It's good. Oh,
Not the clock
ooh.
ticks.
My Dropbox is still running. I guess presumably they renamed the executable name, so
Oh goodness, everything's so different now.
my macro didn't turn, kill it automatically.
Do you think it's just one giant web view now and you can't script anything anymore? Wouldn't that be entertaining? Because I heard somebody complaining that, like, oh, it's running a whole Chromium instance in there.
Is that what
Blah,
it's
blah,
doing?
blah. Yeah.
It's got a bunch of interfacey things. I don't know. It's colorful. I mean, there's two. You got your menu bar, and then there's a desktop app now. So it's not just like Creative Cloud where it's the same thing. You just detach it from the menu bar, and then it's just the same sad app all the time.
I hate that. I opened it up today to see if there were any updates, just so that I could make sure there weren't and then quit it.
You don't have to open it up for that. It'll send you a push notification even if it's closed.
Well, I just wanted it to be done with. I didn't want any surprises when we were podcasting and it was already open. So I was just like, all right, let me just look. And sure enough, it does the same thing it always does, where it's like, what do you want to search for on Adobe Stock? And it's like, that's not my primary use case for this application, and it never has been, never will be. But
You
for
know,
some
honestly, I
reason,
recently had occasion to like look for a bunch of stock footage, and it literally never even occurred to me that there's the Adobe Stock thing there, just because my eyes are so blind to their advertising when I open that app that I forget that it's there.
it also bugs me too, just in terms of hierarchy, because it's saying this is the most important thing, and it's going to be the default thing that you will need. So it isn't, but it isn't the first pane of the interface. It's like the fifth or whatever. And so you're starting off with like the fifth tab of this little floaty window thing. Also, if you have a
Yeah, it's like
non-retinas.
it's restoring your session to what you were last using, or what whoever stole your computer was last using.
Which was just Adobe Stock. But I didn't have anything to update, but when you do the check for updates thing, it will show like a little red triangle thing, like, oh no, there's updates, and then it'll be like, nope, false alarm. I've actually checked now and there aren't. So it's a curious app state to get into.
Yeah, I have on my computer at home here, I have I don't even know where I did it. I would have to look it up. It's not in Keyboard Maestro, I don't think. I got a thing, an automation thing that if Creative Cloud ever opens itself up, kill it within 5 minutes. Same thing with the Red Giant updater, because the I love Red Giant and I love all their software, but their updater loves to open and tell me I have one update, but the update is you should install Universe, our subscription plugin service, and I don't want to do that. Also, that's not an update. And it just sits there waiting for me to like remind myself that that's why it opened itself and I need it to go away. So whatever automation I put on this computer to automatically kill that when it happens, I need to migrate that to a couple other computers.
No, I don't have anything that clever going on. But
Software.
then I archived a bunch of old WAV files to Apple's lossless codec. Put it in a
Is
folder
WAV
somewhere.
the new mem?
No, I was just being funny. But
Sure
so
you were.
I just archived those WAV files, which normally sit on my desktop, because it's
Ugh.
temp. Well, here's the thing: it's a temporary workspace, and I'm
Is
supposed
it?
to clear it
Well,
when I'm
even if it's a
done.
temporary workspace, I still put stuff in folders. I don't want like individual files on my desktop.
Well, but it's just a WAV file. I'm not trying to like manage a project. Also, I want to make sure that I don't keep these like 2 gigabyte audio files around for no particular reason. So that,
Space is at a premium, is what you're saying.
well, space and also bandwidth, which is another reason why I don't drop it inside of like Dropbox or something.
Well, you should get that Dropbox Selective Sync, is what I was going to say, because then it'll keep it all in the cloud for you and only download it on demand.
But then I'd have to set up a whole different folder structure. It wouldn't make any sense because then it wouldn't be underneath the episode number. It'd just be like
Oh,
floating
sure it would.
around in.
Every folder is a selective or a Smart Sync folder, and also not a Smart Sync folder.
No, but I mean, I would want to do it at the folder level, so I don't want to like make a nested folder with special Smart Sync permissions in each project.
They're not folder based permissions. It's all of it or nothing.
I'm sorry, what?
Smart Sync versus Selective Sync. Smart Sync, it just decides whether or not you've used a file recently, and then it puts it in the cloud and deletes it off your computer for you. It's like a Fusion Drive, but for your cloud.
Oh, that's horrifying.
Speaking of which, I have a Fusion Drive in my iMac at work, and I hate it so much. It's so bad.
Are you actually running into performance issues with it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. It's, I mean, it's terrible because, I mean, within, like, the first day, I, like, you know, filled it 75% full, which is not really what it's designed for. But it's, yeah, like, it'll take a solid 5 or 6 seconds to unlock itself sometimes. And there's a lot of just, like, the system sitting there waiting, where my iMac that is a year or two older than that at home that has the just the 2 terabyte SSD in it is just, like, immediate. And the only explanation is the Fusion Drive. So I'm going to have to, at some point, figure out how to clone the disk and then split the Fusion Drive and then figure out how to move only a very small portion of that cloned disk back to the SSD. Because I think I have... I think if I only put my applications and home directory type stuff, well, just my applications actually, on the SSD, I will have a whole 8 gigabytes left on it. Because it's a 128. Why do you need more than 128 gigs inside an iMac SSD? That's what the spinning disk is for. But anyway, I hate the Fusion Drive. It's so bad.
Yeah, I've never had any experience with it. But
are you gonna get on the new Dropbox though?
I mean, I am on the new Dropbox. Everybody is. there's no option.
Well, no, there's an option to get on the stupid new app.
No, but it's already here.
It was an opt-in thing. Did you opt in? Did you click a thing?
I didn't opt into anything, but this tabby floaty thing, that's not what it was before.
Oh, so you're saying the menu bar changed itself to the new deal, but you don't also have the desktop-y doodad where you can have, like, paper files and Google Sheets and crap in it.
I have literally no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, well, there was a thing. There was an article.
Oh.
They have a desktop app now in addition to the menu app.
I see no need to use that.
Just like most of their customers.
I sometimes I worry about Dropbox because it's like, hey, you guys, you do this thing. And
I remember
when they sent out a
survey like every 2 weeks for like 6 months and then they went radio silent. They must have been implementing all of their survey stuff.
Sure, because definitely seems like everything that I want is there because
no.
What I got was a 20% price hike.
But they doubled your storage too.
Yeah, except I wasn't near the storage limit on this plan, so it's like you get twice as much nothing. It's like, okay, great, thanks.
Well, you just got to start unsyncing things to your hard drive and then just leaving it in the cloud.
I don't want to do that because that makes me less likely to discontinue using their service. Yeah, so I use it to share things, and I like it to mirror things that are on my local disk. I don't like surprises. And if there's a situation that comes up where all of a sudden there's a better alternative someday, like the apparent news that iCloud will eventually let you share a folder, it's a feature. Coming in a couple
amazing
months.
Amazing concept.
Oh my god. No, but what was fun about all the Dropbox kvetching that you saw online was that followed closely with the iCloud thing. So people were like, ah, I'm gonna switch all to iCloud, and once they get that sharing thing, it's like, no. no, like, I think you're underestimating what you are using Dropbox for. Mm-hmm. And the utility it provides.
Hasn't even been that many years. Remember when iCloud Drive would just, like, delete things? Like, in the very beginning?
I didn't have it during that time period.
Mm. Oh, you were a late bloomer when it came to the iCloud.
Yeah. Have you ever used Box?
I used Box in the sense that when they were trying to get a bunch of users, they gave 5 gigs free to a lot of people, and I signed up and then never put anything in it.
It's an interesting strategy.
I mean, you know, I wanted all the cloud storage I could get. I have, you know, however many gigs of Google Drive junk, too, and I don't put anything there. Although I just, like, a couple months ago, I downloaded Google Drive has a desktop app similar to the Dropbox app where it will selectively sync folders on your computer, and I didn't realize that was there, but I have that now too.
I don't really like Google Drive.
No, me neither, but like,
yeah.
I have all my stuff in Dropbox, and then I have like my whole computer backblazed. So like, if I could do like a triple redundancy and then move everything to Google Drive too and have it in, you know, every cloud storage facility around the world, you know, I'll do that.
Yeah. I don't think I'm asking for a lot, but there's like just a bare minimum level of things and a lack of friction that I mainly desire. Because also, if you switch to any alternative other than Dropbox, you're going to have a little more friction than having Dropbox because there are so many other people using Dropbox because it's quite popular, particularly among the podcasting crowd. Now, you might be thinking, oh, but you can just upload anything from anywhere and you don't need to worry about it and you can just pass people a link anyways and who cares? And it's like, yeah, but you don't understand. If I just put something in my Dropbox or I know that it's there, I can just go find that link and then it find that file using like the upload browser, and then I'm not actually uploading it again. It just goes because it's already in the cloud.
Yeah.
Which is just a nice feature to have because some of these audio files you're uploading can take a little bit of time.
I guess I'm still spoiled by my internet connection over here for the most part, but I like Dropbox. It's nice, but it would be nice if they just had like a, you know, make all my stuff safe plan and I don't need all your dumb features. Like, they keep trying to cram this Showcase thing. Like, we all got Showcase when they upgraded our plans to the thing that we didn't necessarily know we wanted. It seems neat. It also just seems like just like a really hard to use static blogging engine or something. I don't know.
I don't even know what that is. I feel like they just
you don't know Dropbox Showcase? It's where you can put files and like to-dos and text and stuff, and it's a page that people can go to. Like for presentations, you can make like an online presentation out of your Dropbox files, which is, you know, a thing everyone's been clamoring for.
I wish they would try to add value in different ways that are not so useless to me. But whatever, you know.
I gotta tell you, I got some recent personal experience with Dropbox because now that I have a job, they migrated their they were running off of a personal Dropbox plan where they just sort of shared it with everyone, but they migrated to an actual team business Dropbox thingy, my Bob. So we all got users and stuff. And then you can do that goofy thing where you can like connect your personal and your business one so you can keep them separate but both on the same machine. So basically I have two Dropbox folders now on my computer. But for whatever reason, maybe however it was set up or the fact that it just doesn't get that much use as a product, the business Dropbox folder is like halfway write only. Like I can delete files. I can put files in it. I just can't grab a file and move it out of there because it yells at me and then puts it right back. And nobody has any idea why, which is very useful. You can't overwrite a file, but I can delete it and then remake it. Mm. So that's fun. And the Dropbox guys, you know, you can tell they have no idea what they're doing because they said, you should clear your cache. You should go into this hidden folder and delete all the stuff in there. And that it didn't do anything.
That's nice.
It's very helpful.
Yeah. I don't know. I not to, you know, complain too much. It's not
because who are we?
I don't know. We're usually so full of sunshine, brightness.
I mean, you say you don't like surprises. Does that just apply to technology?
I mean, yes. No. Yeah, no, I don't think I like any surprises.
I was going to say, does that rule apply to your culinary experiences?
I like... I don't know. There's a certain threshold where I think something is a surprise, whereas something is just like something you didn't know about, but is it still part of an expected plan unfolding. I'm not sure what the correct nomenclature for that is, but basically, like, if you're at a restaurant and you get a meal, there some like tasting menu thing, and they're bringing out stuff, and you don't know what the deconstructed crab cake is going to be, and then you see it, and you're like, "Oh wow, look at that!" And that's the level of surprise that I like. The entertainment value of that is good, because I know there's something coming.
You know they're going to deconstruct the crab cake, but you're not sure how many pieces or how elemental they're going to go with it.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes it much easier to figure that out and to be like emotionally prepared for that, not like worry about anything. But if you have other surprises, like surprise, we're going to a tasting menu dinner tonight, right now, then that's not a good surprise. I don't like that. I panic. I'm not dressed right. it's far. Where's the parking? Like, you know, what's going to be on the menu? Like, is it a place that I would even like to eat at? You know, all those other concerns. So I don't like surprise like that. It has to be like,
I was thinking of one surprise in particular, like a surprise. We talked you out of eating a spicy taco, but then we also made your taco spicy.
Oh, yeah. See,
I don't know if you want to talk about this publicly, but I found it shocking and amusing isn't the right word, but I was engaged at every step of the story.
Yeah. Okay. So what Dan was trying to segue me towards was not a deconstructed crab cake, but was...
Really isn't everything a deconstructed crab cake if you think about it?
there was in the news in the Los Angeles Times, the paper of record here, I saw that Guisado's, a restaurant started in, I think, Boyle Heights and has several other satellite locations. It was opening a location very near me in Beverly Hills. And so I was like, this is great. This is finally my opportunity to go there, because that way I don't need to drive to downtown or Boyle Heights, or apparently West Hollywood. I didn't even know they had one there, but I don't even have to go that far. It was like a pure convenience thing. So the other day, after work, I decided that I would just stop by and check it out. You had mentioned, of course, your favorite taco, which we've discussed on this program in the past, but I can't remember honestly what episode it was. But it was Toreados?
I believe the fully qualified path is the Chili's Toreados.
Yes. A taco that is made of chilies and chemical warfare. And it's the kind of thing where there's a warning on the menu. There's three little chili pepper things next to it. And the employee is obligated, apparently, to warn you that you're going to be ordering poison.
They say, have you had this before? And you say, no. And they say, are you sure you want this particular taco? Because it is very hot. It is extremely hot. And you say, yes, with a bit of a question mark. And then they sort of shake their head and then ring you up. And then they spit out this taco. I'm trying to find the menu right now, but apparently their website doesn't have an SSL certificate, so it just doesn't want to let me go to it. But I believe it is four chilies. What is it?
It's habanero, jalapeno.
There's habanero salsa on it. Are there also full habanero chilies?
No, you're right. I think it's just the salsa.
It's got nuclear habanero salsa, which is like, it's not like watered down, like, oh, it kind of tastes like habanero, but it's not super spicy. No, it's just like basically just, you know, pureed habanero. Yeah. There's I believe there's
very
jalapeno,
orange.
Thai chilies. Oh God, what are the other two? I forget now. Two other really spicy chilies.
Yeah.
It might be Fresno's on there too. Anyway, it is it's just chilies, and then I think a couple of red onions.
Yeah.
And then like a little tiny spread of, like black beans on the tortilla to make it all stick together.
Mm-hmm.
And it is nuclear fire. It will, We'll set your head on fire. So go ahead.
My head was fine.
Your head was fine.
The problem was everything that the orange touched.
everything that the light touches.
Yeah.
Is our indigestion.
That was a whole, speaking of Lion King, the stampede and like all that stuff. Yeah. Just imagine that just like in your esophagus, down to your stomach, horrible, horrible pain. Like the scar pushes off somebody kind of like, like that kind of pain, immediate hiccups.
I don't get the hiccups from spicy food. That would be terrifying to me because I would feel like I would suck in air and then like get chilies in my lungs and die.
Oh, no, that didn't happen. But the hiccups are definitely a thing. I actually got the hiccups twice. The first time after just the first bite, which is...
That's not a good sign.
A little abnormal. And then the second time towards the end where I was like, I'm going to power through. And then it's like, nope, can't do it. We neglected the important part of the story that you teased. Because I was warned... And I looked fearful. She could tell that this was not for me, and offered up a solution. She's like, "Why don't you get the cochinita pee bill instead?" And I said, "Sure." And she's like, "You know, that way you get a little meat to go with it, and it'll just be easier." And I didn't realize necessarily that I had agreed to the melding of these things. I thought that I had that I was just going to get the spicy version of the cochinita pea bill, which has one little chili thing next to it on the menu. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll just do that. Like, I'm totally convinced I'm backing off, is what I was thinking. Not realizing what I had agreed to was, yes, sure, just put some of the chilies on top of a cochinita pea bill taco and put the orange salsa on top of that.
Yeah, because you posted the photo of it, and I was like, huh. Well, because you mentioned that the cochinita was a spicy taco. I was like, I don't remember that at all. I'm pretty sure I had one of those because I'm a fan of cochinita pibil. So when you posted the photo and I looked at it, they gave you a cochinita taco and then basically put half of a chili toreado on top of it, so you had at least jalapenos and it looked like the Thai chilies on there, and then a whole bunch of the habanero salsa on top of it. It's like, oh, that's not helpful at all, because the thing about the toreado is each bite is just as hot as the previous bite. It's just how many of them can you stand before your stomach turns itself inside out with blood. So you got the full effect, basically. You just got less bites of it.
It was a huge mistake. Because
basically, you ate like police-grade pepper spray.
Yeah. Also, what I didn't realize, because I was so smart, is that I got this taco, and I'm like, you know, it's not like cochinita pibil well, I'm used to, because usually it doesn't have all these peppers on top, and then I'm just eating it like a complete doofus, and the first bite nearly kills me, and I'm like, oh wow, well, if I can't eat this, then I'll never be able to eat the chili torado. So I was just like, I better like just buckle up and eat this. She's gonna like think that I'm, you know, just a horrible person who can't take any level of spice. And then it became clear after I took a little break and ate some of the Papa's con chorizo special that they had, and some of the quesadilla that you had recommended, just took a couple bites of those, and then circled back to Liquid Death. When I went back to that, it became clear that no, there's just a problem here. Like, I should not eat this at all. but by that point, I had eaten everything except for the last little fragment that didn't have any peppers on it, but still had some of the orange sauce. And I was just like, well, I might as well just eat this part of it, because it just feels silly to, you know, gotta clean your plate. And so I eat that, and there's a pile of probably 10 of those little crummy white napkins, the thin ones that absorb nothing.
Oh, those are the worst. Yeah, yeah. I always end up using like 30 of them and feel like I'm ruining the environment.
Yeah, so I used all of those, and they were all orange from my hands. But yeah, I was
because the salsa, it's not super thick salsa. It is runny enough that it will run down your arm, and in your fevered state of being sweaty and uncomfortable, you may forget and then touch something badly.
Yeah, I heard a cautionary tale from somebody who went there one time and did not wash their hands before they went to use the bathroom.
Well, the problem is when you're eating a taco like this, you're going to be drinking a lot of water too, just sort of out of necessity and because you just can't resist. And by the time you're done, you may have consumed, you know, like half a gallon of water, and you may really need to pee. By the way, I just found it. It is blistered jalapenos, serranos, Thai chilies, and whole habaneros, and then habanero salsa on top. So it's got some heat. It's a spicy taco.
Yes, and I am still in pain.
You still feel it like in the base of your gut there, or is it more esophagus?
It's mostly esophagus.
Oh wow!
And so I have been taking some of the activated charcoal.
Oh wow! You went straight to the activated charcoal.
Well, it's like you take two with a meal, like for indigestion kind of stuff. Like
Pepto is kind of based on that too, right?
No, Pepto's bismuth. But
well, it turns your tongue black, so I assumed there was some charcoaly bits in it.
Nah, it's just what bismuth does. But
I found a picture of the cochinita right here. It's literally just pork and then a couple of onions on top of it. They were so mean. They told you that you couldn't handle the spicy taco, and then they gave you a spicy taco.
Yeah, well, I was I think this is mainly my fault. I think
I would register a complaint with management.
No, because I think I just embarrassed myself by not realizing what I was ordering when I was making these just frantic agreements in an effort to just place my embarrassing order and go sit down.
No, see, we all embarrass ourselves. Mm-hmm. When I did the thing, we were at the downtown location, and the bathroom is sort of in the mall, like it's in like a shopping plaza, and there are security guards there that have to like let you go in to confirm that you are like shopping at one of these places. So these security guards like had to like open the door real fast so I could rush up there because I was sweating. And then I had to explain to them why I was going back again to the bathroom, you know, 3 minutes later, because I had set my downstairs on fire, and they just laughed and shook their head at me. So it's like, you know, the embarrassment kind of comes with the territory when you're getting into this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, there, I was also cognizant that there was no bathroom. This Guisado's location is literally in a parking lot. It's like a taco stand, basically, with a lot of seating covered with an awning thing.
It's outdoors.
Yeah, it was actually pleasantly breezy when I went yesterday evening.
Okay.
Yeah, I found the breeze to be cooling in the my scalp is sweating kind of situation. So that was nice. But yeah, no, this was a mistake. This is a huge mistake. I thought it would be like a fun story, like, oh, Dan, I tried that pepper taco thing, and isn't that funny? No.
See,
no.
Your first mistake was not using the buddy system. Like, it was no mistake that I went with the group of people, mostly because, you know, Rye said he was going to give me money if I eat the taco, and he was going to be there both to confirm that I eat the taco to give me the money, but also to call 911 if something went horribly wrong. So this is not, you need to use the buddy system when you're eating spicy food.
Yeah, well, the cashier, she came over afterwards.
She's not your buddy.
She wanted to check and make sure I was fine. And by that point, I was so embarrassed and mortified that I said, yeah, but thank you for warning
me. You
should
have said, how dare you? What did you do to me? I thought you said no spicy.
No, well, I should have just been smart enough to realize, like, after that first bite where I instantly felt a horrible burning in my esophagus and had hiccups, that I shouldn't eat it.
Did it feel like a good burning at all?
No. And
so
see,
you don't get the thing where heat sort of grows on you after a little while, and it's a little bit of like a cheap high, and it kind of makes you tingly and it's a little fun?
No, not with this. Because I have a much lower threshold for spicy stuff than you do, or
well, I mean,
like a lot of people.
I started out like I was just like you one time. And then I slowly built up my tolerance over time. So you too can, you know, deaden your taste buds over the course of a decade and a half and then, you know, be a fan of the Torriados. And don't get me wrong, that taco messed me up. Like, it was hot, but I enjoyed it. Like, I feel like that's the thing you do, like, once every 6 months. You're like, you know, let's go get messed up and eat some Torriados. And that's kind of how my cousin described it. Like, he said, you know, him and a buddy would occasionally go out to, I think it was the Boyle Heights one, and they would get him and see who could eat the most of the taco. And that was the time that he said he had to go outside and sort of sit down on the curb and ended up just sort of rolling around in the parking lot and have passersby point and laugh at him while he was just sweating profusely and rolling around on the ground.
Well, I didn't do that.
See, you left with more dignity than he did.
Yeah. But
how,
then
how
I...
How were the tacos in general? Did you enjoy them?
Oh, I mean, I liked it. I would go back there.
Mm.
But the thing is, I will never, under any circumstances, order any aspect of that Torriados situation. I've heard that Rye likes to get some of that sauce on the side and dunk a taco in it a little.
He'll buy the taco, and then he just dunks his other tacos into the top of it to add a little bit of spice to it. So he doesn't really eat the taco so much as use it as a sauce. And that's why when he had, you know, most of his Torriado left over after I had consumed mine, for some stupid reason I decided I would eat his too, because, you know, you can't leave a taco like that laying around.
Well, I've learned an important lesson, and it is you can leave a taco like that laying around. There's there's so much worse things that can happen if you eat that taco.
You can't even use the there are starving children on the other side of the world excuse for that, because the taco would probably murder somebody who was hungry enough to have an empty stomach. And that was my main caution for you. Like, buy one of these quesadillas so you're not going into the Torriado on an empty stomach, because then it's going to go right into your intestines and you're going to have an immediate reaction in your chair probably.
Well, I survived, but barely, only barely. I was so frustrated and mad at myself over that, because it's just such a clearly avoidable situation on many levels. There were so many places where I could have just stopped and said, you know what, I'm good. I don't need to keep doing this.
You accidentally went swimming in, like, shark or piranha-infested waters, and you came out unscathed, and then on your way out of the lake, you saw the sign about, like, do not swim in here, you will die, and you're like, whoa, I narrowly missed that one, but I guess today's my lucky day. I survived, didn't die. Wasn't a smart idea, but probably shouldn't do that again.
No, I would say it's more like you go into that piranha-infested lake, and then you're being bitten by piranhas, but you're like, well, I got all the way to the lake, so I need to make the most of my time.
Man, I gotta get my cardio in.
Yeah. So it was more like that, the unscathed part, because I was very clearly not unscathed. But I was like, I'll go to Whole Foods and I'll get some remedies for this situation, something that's hopefully basic on the pH scale.
Just buy a carton of, like, creamer or whole milk and just drink it.
Yeah, nothing helped. That was no fun. But I'm still feeling like the tingly esophagus thing today. And hopefully it'll go away tomorrow. That would be ideal. Be able to eat food and not have, like, a horrible, like, I'm gonna die feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, though, better tingly on the entry than the exit, probably.
I was not going to get into graphic detail about other things, but
you don't have to, because I've been there and I know.
I can neither confirm nor deny, but I will say there is an old Klingon proverb: fire in, fire out.
And then an equally as memorable Romulan proverb: always keep some baby wipes handy just in case.
No, I don't think my plumbing could take that.
That's the secret. No plumbing can.
Well, I think this plumbing is especially special.
Fragile.
But yes.
Yeah. Like your constitution?
Yeah. It's amazing. The barely creaking horribleness of this apartment. But to switch topics,
I would just to finish by saying that was a wonderful tale, and I was glad I got to be a part of it, and I'm also glad you didn't die.
Yes,
because it would have felt real bad if you ended up in the emergency room over a taco that I jokingly suggested you should order.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if they actually have anybody wind up in an emergency room over that, but it's definitely something where I really am not sure why it exists. But
thrill seekers,
yeah,
drug addicts.
Well, the guy next to me, well, not next to me. There's like an aisle you would walk through. It was like, you know, 5 feet away. The guy was there with his buddy, and they were finishing up their tacos when I sat down, so I didn't see what they had. But they're chatting and stuff, and then afterwards, when I finished my tacos, and I'm just trying to sip the Jamaica as fast as I can. The cashier lady comes over and clears off the stuff off their table, and they're like, "Oh yeah, how'd you like the Torreadas?" And the guy's like, "Oh, you know, it was great. Like, I finished the whole thing. It's great. I could have another one right now." And it's just like, "Nope, I don't know you as a human being. Like, how can you do that?"
You know, it's the how old was this person, if you had to estimate?
I would guess early 30s, maybe.
Hmm. Was it my cousin?
Definitely not. But that was an experience. But then afterwards, after Whole Foods and returning home and turning on the AC and then just lying there on the couch in pain, I was like, well, might as well watch Chernobyl. So need a little pick me up, and got through the entire thing. I was only supposed to watch. I told myself I'll watch two episodes, and then just, you know, portion it out the rest of the week. But since Jason's not here,
is the series over then?
Oh yeah, there's only five episodes. It's a miniseries.
Oh wow, I haven't watched any of them yet.
Oh, it's very good, but like I can appreciate the way this is communicated to me kind of a way, not in a I feel fantastic that I watched that kind of a way. So it's interesting in terms of the form and the craft and the depiction of bureaucratic malfeasance and I'll just say abject horror. It sticks with you. Like a taco, but the that's really quite it's quite a good. I would be honestly shocked if they don't win many awards for their effort here with this project.
Well, yeah. I will have to check it out at some point here. Obviously, you know, been hearing about it for months and months with Craig Mazin on Script Notes, who, by the way, he just did a solo episode where he gave a presentation, which I guess he's given as like a talk at different film festivals and stuff, which was really, really good. And I would totally recommend everyone go listen to that. It was the episode before the one that just came out, which when this podcast comes out, it's probably two episodes ago. But it was the only solo episode they've ever done, and it was really good. You should go listen to it.
Okay. And then I know they had the Black Mirror guy on recently, but I haven't watched the season of Black Mirror yet. So I don't know.
That's the one where British people are in the future and bad stuff happens?
Yes, yes. Yeah. What if technology was bad?
What if Dropbox was a web view inside of your desktop app?
It might be in the season. Who knows? I've seen some of the press suggesting that they're running out of new ideas. It's like, okay, well, I mean, it's not that I don't know, dramatic of a thing, but whatever.
Just start making Twilight Zone episodes and then just like make them more horrifying. Isn't that it?
Well, basically. But there's obviously a technology theme, not a supernatural theme to it. But the Twilight Zone, funny you should mention that. That was buzzed about before it came out, and everybody's like, "Oh wow, Jordan Peele, Jordan Peele, Jordan Peele." And then it came out, and then everybody's like, "Oh no,
is it bad?"
Apparently.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think that does or doesn't qualify for other Dan's random Serling, because it doesn't have Serling in it running the show?
I don't know what qualifies for random Serling. I did not read the rules. I was just a guest who got an episode.
Oh, you should suggest that you violate the rules by not picking a random episode and do one of the new ones.
Yeah. I'm sure Dan, other Dan, has ideas. But, yeah, And there's also a Chernobyl podcast, which I'm going to listen to, where Craig is explaining to somebody, I guess, who's interviewing him. I'm not really sure about the format of the show.
I think it was one of the showrunners or producers or something, just talking about stuff.
Yeah, they're just talking about how they made the show and why they wrote certain things a certain way and other stuff, and how they were doing research, because there was some criticism at the time that British voices take you out of the Russianiness of it, but Craig didn't want it to sound like Boris and Natasha. You know, the much parodied Russian accent. So instead, they all just speak in whatever their native accent would be. And then on top of that, he didn't want people to say comrade, because he felt like that was like such a stereotype trope thing. But then they were having they had many consultants, and it was just like, yeah, you know, this is not believable that they would not say it, because you would say that all the time. Like, it was actually a thing. And it's like, oh, well, this is also strange. Like, I don't know. But I think they hit the right number of comrades when you're watching it. That makes any sense.
Nobody said it like in Soviet Russia, reactor melts down you.
No, no.
That would probably take people out of the show.
Probably a little bit. I don't know. I think it's worth checking out if you have time to do so with your HBOs. I know that time is tight for you.
Who has time for anything?
Yeah. No, but
I was making edit changes like 30 minutes before we did this podcast, but it's fine.
Well, what I was going to say is that my original plan was to watch two of these, but it was so good that I watched the entire 5-episode miniseries last night.
It's like you became addicted to the taco of the movie, and then just you kept going back for more pain.
Yes. And so that was unwise because I was sleepy. And
right,
in horrible pain.
Till like 2:30 in the morning.
Shh! Don't say it loud enough for anybody who would be upset to hear that.
who would be upset?
Somebody who's not in town right now, which is why I was up till 2:30 in the morning watching it.
He doesn't listen to this.
Yeah, no, he doesn't.
I thought you were gonna say like your employer was gonna say you were being reckless with your attention.
Yeah, it was a lot of distracted comping. No, my comping was fine. Thank you very much. In fact, I turned around something in an hour and a half that probably would have taken four, but I'm a pro.
You are a pro. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your mins and your maxes and then your ins and outs,
yeah,
your admixes.
A lot of people don't know. I think the real true hallmark of that move from like a good compositor to like a senior compositor is like you know what min does and when to use min. I feel like once you wrap your brain around the scenarios in which you would want to composite with it, that it makes a lot more sense at that point.
I feel like I know what it does, and I've used it specifically with specific intent a couple of times, but it's not something that comes up often for me.
You know what it's really good for?
Removing reflections.
Yes.
You know why I know that? Because I keep every screenshot of everything I've ever taken a screenshot of, and I was scrolling through it the other day, and there was a Slack conversation between you and me where you were explaining how to remove the crew reflection from the side of a car, and I took the screenshot at the time because when you said it, I go, huh, that sounds really interesting. I don't know what the hell he's saying. And now we look at it now, and I go, oh, yeah, sure, that's how that should work. I should remember that.
Yeah, like if you have... Let's say you have a red car, and you have somebody reflected.
I do have a red car. I have two red cars.
Okay, well, we're just comping the one car, Dan. So,
what color red? We're talking like a cherry red?
Yes, cherry red. A cherry red car. So you got your cherry red car there, and you have somebody standing over the car, and then you have the camera behind them, and you can see the camera it reflected in the car. And you're just like, oh, no. Boo. And so you want to remove that. So you roto the person you want to leave the reflection in for, and then you make a big old garbage mat for the stuff you want to remove, and then you make basically a gradient of the color of the car, including the diffuse highlight as it goes from the brighter top part of the car to the darker side part of the car and the bottom part as it gets less reflective. And you min that with your plate, and then it will remove anything that is brighter and replace it with that color. And now you might be saying, uh-oh, but what if there was some dark shadow or whatever?
What if the camera's black?
Yeah, well, see, here's the fun thing. Reflections are additive, so you don't have that problem. The black camera is not subtracting from the car.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yes. The darkest part of the reflection is the color of the car. The true color of the car.
That's true. The true color of the car.
Yes. That's the true cherry of the car.
Oh, see, that's... Wow. Mm. That's amazing right there. I feel like, as an aside, the Nuke's gradient and ramp tools could use a refresh. They're very antiquated.
They are horrendous. We have a gizmo at work. I don't even know where it was sourced from originally, but it helps a lot.
You got a multi-point gradient kind of deal?
Yeah, I think a couple different options.
Will it do curvy bits?
No, but I'll tell you a little secret. Sometimes I just make my own if I have a specific curve that I need to follow or something like that by just using a key mix and two constants and then a roto with a soft feathery edge.
A key mix and two constants and a roto with a soft feathery edge.
Yes.
Huh. What do you need the key mix for?
That way you can key mix between the two constants.
Right, but if one's over the other, why don't you just like turn the opacity on one down?
Well, I just like to work with these and I can flip them.
Okay. I still don't see. I understand how min works. I don't know what key mixes are for.
Oh, key mixes are great because sometimes when you over something, the alpha math on especially soft transparent edges can get a little funky with, like, let's say super bright pixels that are in a semi-transparent spot. But if you use a key mix, then it doesn't matter what the alpha is. It's just blending based on the matte input.
I feel like I've tried to test this in practical usage, and isn't it basically the same as just like overing it and then putting like a gamma correction on the alpha of the top layer?
No, because you're not listening to PyroSA, because there's no alpha concern at all. Like you could literally use two RGBs that have no alpha with a key mix.
Sure,
you don't need to worry about any alpha operation or math causing a problem.
You got a curve though that you're pushing around that adjusts the way and where it mixes.
Yes, because the amount of zero is the amount of B, and the amount of one is the amount of A. So as you go from zero to one, that pixel basically is doing a little dissolve from one to the other. So if you have something that's 0.1, you're going to get 0.1 of your A input there.
Yeah, see, I get it, but this is just a tool that I would throw in there and I would move it around and go like, all right, I see how it's changing things. I couldn't possibly imagine looking at a scenario and going, you know what would solve this? Key mix.
All right. Well, then just remember this in the future sometime.
Yeah, I'll take a screenshot of this podcast and I'll share it with my podcast app, and then I'll come back to it when I understand what a key mix does.
But haven't you ever had a situation where you just want to put some stuff together and you don't want to worry about what the alpha is?
Like what?
Okay, well, let's say you have two different keys. You've pulled a green screen key.
Sure, I got a key for a guy on the right side of the frame and lady on the left side of the frame.
Yes. And now you would like to have one thing to pass on down through the rest of your comp.
Yeah, why wouldn't I just over them? Because they're not overlapping. Or in this instance, are we talking about stuff that overlaps?
Well, let's say there's a dark shadow on the green screen. And so you know that you need to softly transition from one key to another key.
Okay.
So let's say it's the same foreground figure, like a medium shot. So you got like shoulders and head. And let's say there's an inconsistent green in the background. and you can pull the key, and you want to get the flyaway hairs on both sides of the head.
Sure. So in my key on the flyaway hairs, I got a shadow, and then I need another key that doesn't have the shadow, which is a little sharper.
Yeah, and so you use the key mix node with A and B, and then a roto to you control the transition from one of your keys to the other one of your keys, so that that way you're not putting it on top of one, because one of them will be darker and heavier and have more of the background in it than you want, and the other will be the reverse. So you just want to hit that happy spot in the middle where you basically have almost nearly the same mat, and you can control that with the roto that you're feeding into the mat input on the key mix.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So
you're mixing the keys.
Right, and I'm trying to think, what would the setup look like if I didn't have a key mix tool? I would probably need three copies of everything, right? Not just two.
Well, I would assume in a situation like that, if you weren't going to use key mix, you would, you know, use a mask input for the stuff you want from one, ignoring all the super heavy dark stuff, or stenciling out the super heavy dark stuff of one, and then doing the reverse on the other one, and then using an over to put them together. But now you've got multiple sets of rotos that you need to keep in sync, as opposed to one roto that just controls what is basically a dissolve between these two things.
Hmm. Yeah, that's probably what I would do. I would make that roto and then use the copy to put it in both of them.
Okay.
I'll try a key mix one of these days if I ever composite anything ever again.
If you open a script of mine, you're going to see at least bare minimum 5 key mixes in there.
Oh, I saw a bunch of them when we were making our stupid logo for this podcast.
Yes, and then you changed all of them. But whatever.
I didn't change all your key mixes, did I?
I thought you changed all the like overs and stuff.
Maybe.
Nah, it doesn't matter. The important part was that I used reformats to fix what was going on with your absolutely mind-boggling resolution issues.
What did I do? I did a bad subtract or something, and I had some negative alpha values or some crap that I fixed with a clamp after you yelled at me. Mm-hmm. What did I do with my format?
Well, you had the enormous the PSD thingy, and then you were just like scaling it, but because of the way you were getting the window from one channel, the format and display window was huge, but then it finally just got like cropped down to the very bottom of the script, but it didn't need to be that big.
I did a project that's on my website, which was ostensibly like animating a still image, because there are so many of those on my website, you won't know what I'm talking about, unless I call it out specifically. That's a joke. But I animated it all basically at like 8K, and it took like a day to render, and like my final output was like 900 by 900. I was like, why did I do this to myself, because I really wanted this to look real nice and stuff, but then at the end of the day it was just like I had shot myself in the foot, and it was so like I was using copies on stuff of copies, so it was like creating this weird effect, and it was so absurdly slow to work for no reason whatsoever.
Mm.
It was a very long time ago though.
Now I gotta ask you a question that I think I know the answer to. Mm. Are you a copy or a shuffle copy kind of person?
I mean, I think there are times when both of them are useful. I probably use more copies than shuffle copies.
Yes, same.
I mean, because shuffle is nice. It's a nice tool from time to time, and so is shuffle copy. But it's kind of like it looks like a child's toy compared to just like an adult tool with some drop downs.
No, well, see, my problem is my brain still can't fully wrap its. I can't wrap my brain completely around the order that things are going. If you started getting into some of the more exotic channels that might be coming from a 3D render, etc.
Oh, the way you got the four quadrants and you got the top down and then the over to the right kind of thing?
Yeah, and so if you want to like move the Z over to a different thing, then it becomes... move the Z over to a different channel that is not RGBA, and then you got to like do some weird some stuff to get around it that I can never remember how to do. But if you're doing the same thing with a copy, you just hook up the A and the B to your render, and then you just pick the one channel from a list, and then pick the other channel from a list, and you're just like, there, I did it. A lot of times I'll just like shuffle something out to just be an RGB, and then I'll use a copy to put it somewhere else, just because I can understand how the shuffle's working to get the whatever it is, and then I can understand the copy's working to put the thing wherever it is. But yeah, it's when you're getting and putting at the same time that I'm not good at that.
When you're getting in the pudding, it's not the same. Yeah, no, I get it. That's the very nuke way of working. You use more tools, but use simpler tools to sort of visually understand what the hell's happening. You don't want one giant complicated node that has all of your features in it. Like, you wouldn't say, unless you're a lunatic, you wouldn't grab 60 read nodes and press M on your keyboard and merge them all together, because that's just a silly thing to do.
Yeah. It also, another thing, if you're open to somebody's script and they're very into Nuke's channel workflow for minimizing the number of connections in their comp.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I can't tell where anything is because I don't know where anything's going. Everything's right. Just hidden because you'll look at some merge node and it's getting a channel that was shuffled in like, you know, 800 nodes up from where you are, and you have no idea like how to go find the source of that thing, like where that's getting shuffled into to be the mask that controls this color correction. That kind of workflow just makes me so unhappy.
Yeah, anytime I try to work like that, I inevitably forget to do the also merge all thing in my merge node. So like, I'm missing the channel way down the pipe, and I got to go figure out which merge didn't pass the stuff along. But the initial way that I learned Nuke was shockingly reading the help file that came along with it, which maybe based on the version or maybe based on the fact that they didn't update the help documents very often, was sort of written in that form because it was before they really added mask inputs to all the nodes. So they were, you know, it was a lot of that straight down a single branch, reshuffle stuff around. And it took a while to figure out. And I feel like they were very reluctant to add the mask inputs, but all of us dumb Fusion users were going like, well, my Fusion nodes just had this little triangle on the side where I put up a mask in, and it works really well. And they're like, fine, you weirdos, we'll give you a mask input. And it was one of the greatest things that they did.
Yeah, well, they're the same situation if you're coming from Shake, because there was a mask input on the side of Shake. And
I never had the pleasure of actually using Shake. I kind of want to find a computer that's old enough to actually run Shake.
I have computers that are old enough to run it. The problem is I don't have an operating system currently installed on them that is old enough to run it. But I suppose if I really cared, I could set up a virtualized operating system. But the last time I tried to do anything like that, it was a pain in the butt. Maybe I could get like a little drivey thing.
Yeah, get yourself a little external SSD over a Thunderbolt and install, I don't know, like Tiger. What do you got installed on that to make Shake run?
I think it worked on everything up to, I want to say it was either Sierra or the one before Sierra.
I think it was like LCAP. I think Mavericks was the last thing it worked on.
Okay, yeah, it was,
or Yosemite, I should say, was when it died.
It was right after the transition from the cats to the places.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So whatever cat version you want to dig up, it works fine. There's no advantage really to running it on one of the newer ones, because they never updated it. So it's not like it got any like new bells and whistles, and it's also not really like threaded to take advantage of, advancements, in the operating system or advancements in,
What about multi-threading? Does it do multi-threading?
I think it's technically multi-threaded for some things, but I swear, like the last time I used it, I was just like, I'm batch processing something that is like a key light and a background that I pre-comped, and it's like, this is taking 2 minutes a frame to render, and it's like, why is it doing that? Is this HD footage? Like, what's happening? I came to the realization that if I completely closed out of it and ran it in batch mode from the command line, that it would run faster, because part of it was just trying to render things in the viewer, even though the viewer was paused. I guess it's not a well maintained, sterling, amazing piece of software. But you can go find it on eBay, I think. the project that I had to do with it last time, an old supervisor of mine asked for my help, and so he provided everybody with an old copy of Shake that he just like bought off of eBay. So I have the box and Shake. He never asked for it back. Although I haven't heard from him in like 6 years, maybe.
Is it the last version, the 4.1 or whatever?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And
his last stable release, November 21, 2008. Oof. 4.1.1.
Yeah. And it
ran on Linux too?
Yeah, well that's where it started.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because Shake was made by a bunch of ex Sony Pictures guys who started this company, Nothing Real Software, Nreal, and they made a node-based compositor based on their ideas that I forget if it was not implemented or something. There was some friction in terms of development where like it wasn't going to happen. So they went off and did their own thing. And so Shake was developed by this company for a long time, and it was all Irix Linux focused, and then they added Windows support, and then Apple bought them because they're like, oh, we can get the prestige of this world-class compositing software, and it'll be a reason to come to the Mac, because if we buy them, then we'll have the software run on the Mac, and that'll be a huge incentive. And so they did, and they made it run on the Mac, and then they killed the Windows version, but they couldn't kill the Linux version because that was the one that everybody actually used. So that's the fun story.
There's some fascinating stuff on the Wikipedia article here for Shake. I don't know if you were you using Shake when they end of lifed it at the time?
Yes, because at the end of life period, Apple was selling site licenses.
That's what I saw here. Existing maintenance program subscribers had the option to license the Shake source code for $50,000.
Yes.
Did anyone do that and fork Shake and try to like make an internal version?
I don't think anybody did it and forked Shake, but I think they did it to have Shake, because it was $50,000 might sound like a lot of money for something that's dead, but
a studio, but yeah, that's nothing. And but presumably you got to invest the time and energy into continuing to patch the stupid thing to make sure it continues to run.
Well, it was just a short term solution, because the when Sony bought that license to do that for a couple projects, they only used it for a few years because the plan was to move everything to Katana 2D. And then they sold Katana to the Foundry, and they ripped out all of the 2D stuff because the Foundry had Nuke and they didn't want it to overlap or compete with their other product. So that's why Katana's 3D only now. Which is funny, because in the span of that time period, they had built all this stuff and then had to destroy it all. But it was fun while it lasted. Now, in terms of Shake, like, we use Shake on Watchmen and on Zookeeper. But no, wait, we didn't use it on Zookeeper. They used it on Cats and Dogs, but we were supposed to be using the same pipeline as Cats and Dogs, but they had Katana 2D advanced far enough that we were in Katana 2D for Zookeeper. Because there were some warping tools that were not in there yet. Because imagine being at a point in your career where warping tools and Shake are superior still to what you have in some of the other software packages.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know who's interested in this story, but anyway.
Well, the last thing I wanted to bring up was the Wikipedia article has a link to this Mac Rumors page from June 21st, 2006, where it mentions that Apple is ending Shake. This was right when they dropped the price, and that Apple has announced that haven't announced publicly, but it has been leaked from Apple that they are working on a replacement for Shake, codenamed Phenomenon, that will be released in 2008.
Yeah, that didn't happen, and I saw one of the main Shake guys, like, think the main developer on it, said that there was never really any plan for them to follow up with that.
That's what I want to know. I want to know what the next plan looked like. Were there mock-ups? Were there plans? Was there code? What was the idea? Where was it going to go? Or were they just going to do the Final Cut Pro X version of Shake, which would have been abysmal?
No, they. My understanding from memory, and I could be getting some of these details wrong, is that the developers were basically all split up for Aperture development and for Motion. But Motion, as you know, is not a suitable replacement for Shake.
No, and I remember at some point somebody said, no, I know we just released Motion, but no, Motion is not Project Phenomenon. Which is obvious. Motion is basically an accelerated, rewrapped, uglier version of After Effects with behaviors instead of keyframes. But it never seemed like it was trying to compete on a Shake or a Nuke level. It was Apple ugly After Effects.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why it was ugly is some of the same developers that if you really look at Shake, really look at it. It's hideous. But
all the rounded beveled edges everywhere and all the shadow gradients on the buttons.
And the no text aliasing and the drop shadow on the text that's on the buttons that are beveled in 3D.
See, that's how everyone knows you're a real super nerd, is because your text doesn't have aliasing on it.
Ugh.
Everything's monospaced no Antius Menlo or something.
No,
or
it Monaco. It wasn't even monospaced. But the aliasing played a part, not just in the text, but all the nodes were connected with I believe the technical term was noodle.
Yes, the noodles.
The noodles were the basically most compositing packages have a straight line that goes from this is the node that feeds this information to the next node. It's a line, but in Shake, it's a noodle because it bends and is
it's curly.
It's curvy and bouncy and stretchy, and the fun part of that really wears off. Now there was a setting to turn down the noodliness to be a straight line, but even if you did that, they didn't really have good layout and alignment stuff. There was a button you could push that would theoretically put all of your stuff in what more or less amounted to a grid pattern.
Oh, when you accidentally hit the backslash key in Nuke or whatever it is?
Yeah. And except it just would kind of put everything in the wrong spot, no matter what. So you would never use that. But the part of the frustration with the lack of aliasing is that those curvy line things would always have little jaggy bits all through the line. And even if you straightened it out, you'd wind up with you'd have this really long line, and all of a sudden, that one pixel just jumped over to the next pixel on the grid because the line was not completely, vertical.
It's like playing a game of Snake on your Nokia cell phone.
Yeah, and because it could take multiple inputs, they had multiple little, nubbins on the top. So every multiple input node, there was a merge, a special merge where multi-layer merge, I think, where you could just keep adding little nubbins and it would shift all of the other nubbins because everything would try to stay centered. So all of your little noodle lines and everything would move every time you changed something like that. Or if you change the connection from A to B or whatever, then you'd have to resort everything else out because it wasn't just disappearing to a singular point. It was disappearing to nubbins, and then nubbins moved.
I got to tell you, that sounds like a delight to use.
It's not super great, but it could have been worse. Could have been worse. There was a compositing software that they had internally at Sony that they tried to develop their own node-based compositing thing. But as you can imagine, when the brain trust behind the first node-based compositing team left, the compositing stuff that they developed internally, not so good. So it was it was called Bonsai, and it was if you took Shake and then made it look like was it Motif or whatever it was, CDE, the real busted Unix graphics tool set stuff from the 90s, where there's just barely beveled diamond edges and stuff and like big, thick, horrible, garish text.
Oh, yeah, this.
Yeah.
It's like a Microsoft product.
It was exceptionally hideous. So you'd look at something like that and you'd be like, well, I really would rather be using Shake because it just was not as bad as that.
Look at the color scheme on this junk. I don't know what this is, but this is interesting.
What was the color scheme on what junk?
Oh, these CDE things.
A
lot of teals, a lot of very pale purples.
Yeah, well, it's probably Sun Microsystems or SGI that you're looking at, they would have the teals and the purples to show that they were fun and for art and. The net.
I had to put my very large, loud headphones on the other day at work just to prevent myself from chiming into a conversation. Somebody was attempting to explain to a youngster Silicon Graphics, the computer manufacturer.
Oh, no.
And the perils and the products. And I was just like, nope, no, I can't. This is going to suck me in, and I'm going to spend a lot of time talking about something and just get very perplexed looks from these young children.
Yeah, your passionate views about Octane.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Boxes. They started getting into Octane. That's right when I was like, nope, headphones go on. Music goes loud. It's like, because you can't explain, like, imagine a computer the size of your kitchen table that costs $300,000 and is incredibly slow and none of your apps work on it. And people would say, what's the point of that? It's like, well, you can run one cool movie-making app on it. No.
Yep. No. They really got slaughtered by the commodity hardware market and the fact that other people would make software for not them. Their hubris got the best of them.
Ah, they did have a cool logo, though.
Mm-hmm. Remember when, towards the end, they started running Linux and Windows to try to lure people back, being like, hey, you don't have to use IRIX where none of your stuff works.
Yeah, wasn't it, they were like, we can dual boot, you can have all of it at the same time.
Yeah, and that's so great. There was a kid my freshman year of college, so this was 2001, who got a brand new whatever it was. I don't remember what the name of the box was at the time, but it was the one that kind of just looked like a navy blue tower that was sort of like slopey on the sides. And inside he had like a Wildcat graphics card and it was running Windows, and so it was like very fancy. We were all wowed and impressed by that, but it was just because he had a lot of money. But it was such a weird thing to own.
The kind of bluish slopey guy?
Yeah, it's sort of a mini tower.
Sorry, I'm trying to use Google Images. They had some really cool looking junk.
No, it wasn't this. It was after that. But we should
it was probably this one.
Yeah, we should probably wrap this up now that we're just Googling. Oh goodness,
oh, God.
Dan.
I hit a slash at the end of this very long URL. Oh, there you go.
Dan's trying to kill me with URLs.
I've tried to kill you with tacos and URLs. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. The time is 10:11 p.m. It's 82 degrees Fahrenheit, 25% humidity in my office here. It's just horrible. It's horrible hot in here.
82.8, 34% humidity.
My God, man. How are you alive?
I don't know. That's why I was trying to indelicately wrap up this podcast so I could turn on the AC.
Thank you for tuning in, everyone. This has been another episode of... Square wise, I don't know.
No, it's another episode of what were they talking about? I turned it off halfway through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody's gonna listen to this.
No, not at the end part. They just want to hear the tacos.
I do like the tacos. I had a burrito for dinner tonight. It was nice. Yeah.
What kind of burrito?
Al pastor.
See, I'm gonna say something controversial here. I prefer al pastor as a taco. I like the simplicity of its ingredient list and construction. Whereas I
this
feel
was
like
not a pineapple al pastor.
Well, that's also not what I'm here for, Dan. I'm here for pineapple.
I know you're here for the pineapple. This place's al pastor as a taco is a little dry. In a burrito, there's some beans and there's a little bit of salsa and it's really good. And I'm a fan of having it that way. Although their carne asada is some of the best I've also had ever anywhere, because it's got a very like delicious, smoky, grilled sort of char flavor to it, and it's wonderful.
So wait. Let's back this up. What is inside of the burrito you ordered tonight?
Oh, God. It's al pastor, it's onions, it's some beans, and there may not be actual salsa in it. It is, okay, so it comes with black beans, not rice, cheese, no, that's for the bowls. Burritos are made with beans, onions, cilantro, and salsa, and I say, no cilantro, and they say, okie dokie.
Okay, and are we talking, I assume, raw onion here, raw cebolla?
Yes, okay. which is good. I like that little bit of crunch. They're cut very small, like almost like McDonald's burger style small.
I don't care for that at all. But
yeah, I know you're not a fan of raw onion. I like a raw onion.
Yeah, but it's interesting. I was gonna say we had almost the same thing when you first started talking about al pastor, but then I forgot you hate pineapple. Because
hate pineapple. I just that is not the canonical version of al pastor in my brain, because that's not how I first had al pastor.
Ah, well, for the canonical one in my brain is pineapple.
Well, yeah, you're Mr. Pineapple. Mm-hmm. Like if you were a Pitbull style rapper, you would be Mr. Pineapple. Which is also the name of a local beer, Mr. Pineapple.
Yeah, from Santan Brewing.
Yeah, they have a guy dressed up in a big pineapple suit who runs around at the beer festivals, and you get your photo with him.
I'm not going to do that.
I've done that.
The reason why I said that is because I got a cauliflower crust the other day at Whole Foods. It's not a crust, really, in the sense that you're thinking. It's more like if you had sort of a savory pancake.
Like a crepe?
Yeah, well, a little fluffier. I don't know if fluffy is the right word, but because it's like cauliflower that's mushed up with like tapioca flour and eggs, so it's not like an airy dough, but it has like a spongy quality to it, sort of. And the edges cook way faster than the center of it does, because your center has the ingredients on it. And so the edges will get pretty, I don't want to say bitter, but like a little singed by the time the interior of it has become structurally sound, because you don't want a floppy pizza.
Are you trying to say this was good?
I don't know if good's the word I would use, but I've had these before because Jason... You know, trying to avoid the carbs, and I had all of the carbs yesterday with the tacos, so I was like reducing the carbs tonight. Because tapioca flour still technically has some carbohydrates, but there's not that much in it. But anywho, on the pizza, I put some leftover Monterey Jack that was shredded with some mozzarella and the spicy Calabrese salami, which is not that spicy, and honestly, I could taste no heat today because I'm ruined. But then I had a little diced up pineapple that I put on top, so I had like a little quasi al pastor tajuda, I guess. Nearly.
Sounds good.
Yeah, but and then I put some of the chipotle cholula on it to give it some of that smoky flavor. But not too much liquid, because again, Sog City, the crust does not stay firm.
You don't want to live in Sog City.